Thank you very much, honored gentlemen, lady of the chair, and dear audience. The whole day we have been hearing about great results, fantastic results in cleft surgery and in normal surgery. And I'm going to take a step back into the theoretical area. And you might ask, why? Why don't you show us great clinical pictures? We believe that with the new concept of inductive surgery, we can solve some, not all, and don't get me wrong, we can't solve all the problems we have been with the reconstruction we have already seen today. Because no matter if you're talking about cleft or normal surgery, you always have the problem, you need a lining, an inner lining, and you have got the problem of scar tissue and contraction. We've heard that in every speech we heard today. And inductive surgery might be, in some cases, a way out of this dilemma. So if you're looking at the modern concepts of maxillofacial surgery, there's one part, the restorative surgery, the reconstruction of the aesthetic and functional maxillofacial conditions. There are many techniques. Some are greater, some are not so good. That's not the topic of my discussion now, of my speech. What I want to focus on is the regenerative surgery by tissue induction. And we've already heard in the lecture of Professor Vincenz that the endogenous tissue engineering might be a way out of some of the dilemmas we have. And no matter if you're concerning about restorative surgery only or following the my or our leads concerning the regenerative surgery, you must always consider them as a unit. The principle of one also is required for the other. So if you're doing restorative surgery, reconstructive surgery, always keep in mind what I'm telling you in the next few minutes about regenerative surgery, and you can't do regenerative surgery without restoring the from aesthetics and functional maxillofacial conditions. So what is this regenerative surgery? Professor Vincenz already mentioned Joseph McCarthy, who was the first in 1992, who established a way of destruction osteogenesis and named it tissue engineering and inductive surgery. Monasterio was also one who said that destruction osteogenesis might be a way to do an inverse facelift. That would be the aesthetic part, not my part of my lecture now. And Manson and Dunhill, and that might be the key point of my presentation, quoted that it is the stimulation of the body's own repair mechanism. And already on this slide, you see the limits of what I'm going to tell you. You can't expect the body to repair a defect we've seen in normal cases. That is impossible. Actually, it might be even getting worse by the contraction of the scarring we are having. But there are cases where stimulating the body's own repair mechanism might be a way out of some of the problems we're facing. So what I believe is that inductive surgery might be the key to some of solving the problems. I'm probably focusing on three different approaches. One is the tissue induction in prefabricated composite grafts, as Professor Vincenz already showed us. The destruction osteogenesis, and we'd rather say destruction histiogenesis, and I will tell you why. And the bone muscle crosstalk, the interaction between regenerative bone and muscle, not an entirely separate group in this list. Because it's bone muscle crosstalk itself is an inductive procedure done by one of the above mentioned methods. So let's first talk about the prefabricated composite grafts, which were first described by Professor Vincenz and Professor Holle in 1996. You already have seen this slide. I will not go into detail. You've already heard it from Professor Vincenz. What I want to point out now is what is the tissue induction in this composite grafts. You've heard that there is a bone who has been covered with skin, with dermal skin, and then covered with another graft and being left there to heal in. We have the bone remodeling. A vital bone remodeling, so the bone still lives when it is transplanted into the defect. and is beginning to remodel. We all know that. That's no matter if you're using scapular graft or iliac graft, a tibia or a cartilaginous graft. They all remodel in some way. Sometimes we don't want it because they are atrophying, and sometimes we would like them to remodel more because they are molding back together with, for instance, a premaxilla. The attachment of the epithelium and creating an osteomucosal unit, already described for the first time in 1998, is maybe the key to understanding what's going on around the prefabricated composite grafts. You have the implant inserted into the bone and covered with soft tissue, first in the region of prefabrication and then at the transplant site, where it is exchanging into the local tissue. And this provides not only a mechanical stability of the epithelium, but also via wet keratin expression, anti-mycotic and antibacterial resorption control base, which hinders the bone to be atrophied too much. So the tissue integration is the induction of the osteomucosal unit, already described by Professor Vincenz, the complete restitution of the mucosal inner lining, providing a safe environment for the implants to grow in and for an attachment of the gingiva that can resist the masticatory loading, and just what I'm told, the anti-inflammatory immune response of this neomucosa. And as you can see in this example, the reconstruction of a mandibula or the maxilla, they are inflammation-free, and that is the key for a long-term sustainable result. When talking about destruction osteogenesis, I already told you that we would like to use the term histiogenesis, because it's not only the bone that's going to be distracted and remodeled, but also the soft tissues attached to this bone. Also, this slide you've already seen with Professor Vincent's presentation. And I want to point out that this gradual stress that is done on the bone also stimulates and maintains the regeneration of living tissue attached to this bone. And Professor Celia already pointed this out when he was discussing on one of our group's publications in PRS in 2001, when he said, and when he praised about the possibilities of the prefabricated composite graft, but pointed out that it might be a good idea to use destruction osteogenesis in some of the cases presented there. So destruction osteogenesis, that's the advantage of the bone segment and leads to formation of new bone behind it. And histiogenesis, the biological process of soft tissue adaptation to this resulting gradual strengthening. And that's what Bell and Guerrero already said in 2007. You already seen this slide. I can all actually take you over it. But perhaps just for the regenerative purpose, Professor Vincenz has already said that new bone cells are integrating into this new cut area and are stimulating not only the bony structures, but also the mucosal structures around them through enzymatic and local hormonotic adaption. So what is the scope and the indication of the bone destruction osteogenesis? Of course, the big monoblock advancement might be only useful in really deformities and congenital deformities. The midface destruction, on the other hand, might come in handy, and I will show you a case at the end of my presentation, when high LEFO2 or perhaps LEFO3 osteotomy line, an advantage of the bone could be used to for a midface reconstruction of a deficiency in that part. Then alveolar bone block, as you as well see, and number five is mostly used by oral surgeons, used if they want to increase the height of the bone for inserting a dental implant, and shall not be the part of this this lecture. The sagittal lengthening actually might come in handy, and we have already seen, I believe Professor Montaudon showed Pierre Robert syndrome kit when he was using distraction osteogenesis for sagittal lengthening or for ascending of the arch of the mandibula, also useful when caring about asymmetries. And the bone transport, already reported by Professor Vincenz, is a really working horse for us for as an alternative for bony reconstruction with prefabricated composite grafts or bone blocks. So in this case where this patient has lost his right mandibula due to an ablative surgery of the tumor, we used a custom-made three-dimensional distraction device to move the bony segment around this curve. As you can see here, this is all new bone with the inserted dental implants already in place and the reconstructed bridge work. That's just as an example. And now we're coming to the bone-muscle crosstalk. As I told you already, it is not really a strategy in itself, but is a consequence of the above shown methods. To understand what I mean with bone muscle crosstalk, one must keep in mind the anatomy of the face and the architecture of the face. The soft tissue of the face is supported by the underlying bone. That's the major principle, and we always have to remember that. The superficial structures that are overlaying these bony structures have deep connections to this bone for the periosteum and deeper inside. Moss and Mendelssohn and also Stutzin and Baker have found this, fact. And furthermore, Stutzin and Baker said that these planes, actually a superficial and a deep plane, are separated by a flat fat tissue, and they are like floating over another, but are also connected to each other by fibrous attachments, which also limits the possible movement of these planes. And another one is that the fascia has viscoelastic properties, which also limits its movement capabilities, found out by Cesar Guerrero, who also pointed out that the mechanical tension generated by the muscles is transmitted through these very attachments to the fascicula and then to the bone. This also brings us to the complexity of aesthetic face surgery. When thinking about and putting together what I've just said, we have an envelope that is connected through some fascial planes over a fat plane connected with fibrous attachments. Then the way the facial envelope is fixed to the skull might best be described with sectoral architectonic shoring. And like we have seen in Professor Pavel's lecture, the architecture follows us even in medicine. And when you look at these poles, you can say that these are the bony structures that hold the whole thing in place. And they are connected to the soft tissue represented by this roof with this steel cables or the fibrous attachments we have in the face. And if you change one of those poles, you also change the entire structure, not only the roof that is connected directly here, but also if, for instance, the wind is blowing in here, the changes in this pole will affect the others as well. And this is what also differentiates reconstructive and regenerative surgery from pure cosmetic surgery. If you're just working on the tip of the nose, then you won't change much in the sense of this bone muscle crosstalk. If you're just doing skin dermatologic treatment, then you won't change anything. And even if you're doing a dental implant, you can help the patient, but you won't change anything about the architecture of the face. So tissue regeneration is all about the influence the bony structure has on the mimic muscles and vice versa. The muscles that are close to the destructed bone are stimulated by the stretching, we've already heard that. And the muscle itself is not only being grown bigger, but is also strengthening at its insertion and its origin point. That's what Markov found out. And this bone muscle crosstalk is now this interaction between the regenerative muscle and the remodeling bone. And now comes another term that I would like to point out, the musculoskeletal balance, already heard in the lecture of Professor Vincenz. This also has consequences for our treatment. Advanced bone blocks relocation surgery changes the tension of the bone, of the fascicula, and of the superficial muscles that are inserting in this thing. So the SMAS operation that has become very commonly in plastic surgery is actually not only changing the skin, but also the underlying fibrous tissues and, in the long term, the bone. Don't get me wrong, if you change something at the skin or even at aging, you don't get the results within a few days. It takes, to our meaning, 12 to 16 weeks during the mimic muscles regenerate until you really see the final results. So to give you an idea what I mean about the interaction between the skull and the facial tissues, these two patients have not been undergoing any soft tissue operations. This has just been bony structures that has been changed. But the stress that has been reduced or introduced by the bony operation has its influence on the soft tissue. If you look here at the patient, he has this typical chubby cheek for angle class 2, with a rounded face appearance, deepened nasomental folds, and here it is all fanned out. All that has been done is that the mandibula has been distracted, and the entire tissues have followed the bone to give you that aesthetic appearance. And not only the aesthetic appearance is important, if you look at this patient with this dish face, you can see the early bags, the eyeballs are already showing, and she had difficulties to breathe, and with a mid-face advantage, also with distraction osteogenesis, this is the case where I said it's a high LEFO2 osteotomy, we can not only restore the function and the aesthetics, in particular the oral function, nasal function, and the eyelid function, but also the musculoskeletal balance via the bone muscle crosstalk I've talked about. So, to conclude this, it might seem that this is only for aesthetic purposes, but if you think about what I hope I could introduce you to, the theory of inductive surgery, when you're doing, for instance, distraction osteogenesis, and you're using this technique to not only let the bone grow, but also the tissues, you might have the chance, for instance, in NOMA surgery, and Professor Vincenz has shown us a case in NOMA surgery, where you would be able to change the inner lining into a way that you're locating the local flaps and increasing the possibilities of restoring the anatomy in a physiological way without using any external flaps. So, and to conclude, the future of reconstruction in science, in our beliefs, lies in regenerative medicine and regenerative surgery, but also keeping in mind that restorative surgery and reconstructive surgery is still the basis, and regenerative surgery might only be the topping, as you might say so. Thank you very much.